Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And welcome back to Mads World. I'm your host, Mads, and I hope you've been enjoying season 10 so far. If you're new here or if you've just been enjoying the show, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening from, as it's the easiest way to help out the show. Or just find me on social media, share it everywhere, and tell all your mates about it. This week, I'm joined by performer, writer, and creative Lily Burton. An executive committee member for Abortion Rights UK, Lily is aiming her slingshot at no-go social constructs with song, comedy storytelling, and of course, she loves to throw in some dance moves too. We caught up just as Lily was hot off the heels of her debut show at this year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival called All Aboard at Termination Station, a comedy cabaret about her personal experiences of abortion. In this episode, we chat about Lily's comedy journey, finding balance in creating a comedy show centered around abortion, how she hopes the show will contribute to the wider conversation of reproductive rights, backlash she's received as a result of the show, her personal challenges when creating a show around such a sensitive subject, and so much more. Trigger warning for this episode, there is in-depth discussion about abortion, reproductive rights, and sexual assault. Hello, Lily.
Hello.
How are you?
I am good, thank you. I am well. I'm alive after Edinburgh Fringe.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. I'm sure it was a wild ride. Tell me all your highlights from your time up at the Fringe.
Oh my goodness. So I work for, as my like boring muggle day job, I work for a restaurant group called Hawksmoor, and they're like fancy steak place.
Yeah, love Hawksmoor. Yeah.
So there's one in Edinburgh. So basically, I felt like I was queen of the Fringe, just like, you know, had a bad day going to Hawksmoor, had a good day going to Hawksmoor. My friends had a good day, take them to Hawksmoor. So like, as much as it was the duality of living a complete student life of mainly like pot noodles, chicken burgers and self-loathing, I randomly had like this counter kind of bougie lifestyle that I led as well. I've never eaten so much steak.
At least you had some steak to like get you through. I feel like I had a steak yesterday at Flatiron, which is honestly my favorite restaurant ever. It's so good. The Bernays sauce, creamy spinach. I don't know what they put in that creamy spinach crack. It is so good.
It's so good. But babe, so I've got to say, like, I'll take you to Hawksmoor. If you like Flatiron.
Yes. Come really?
and I get now you're going to get loads of people writing in. You need to be friends with me now, but I'll say this, I get 50% off all food. So
stop it. Oh, you would have been the most popular girly up at Fringe.
I know, I really felt like I was. And it was just like on a savage day as well, just going and having like the strongest martini that basically makes you go blind in one eye. Like, you're like, you know how Carrie Bradshaw's like brilliant, really classy with her martini, like, like I'm literally like, but still, like, I will drink it, obviously.
So good. Well, I've got a couple more speed date question rounds for speed date question round for you. God, that really felt like a tongue twister, even though I do this every week. I'd love to know, what is your favorite recent pop culture moment?
I'm just obsessed with Hunsnet. And like, I feel so fucking seen on that page. Oh. And it genuinely brings me so much joy. And I think in a world of social media where it can sometimes be hard to find that.
It's so good. And like, do you know what? And I feel like I talk about Maddie Healy far too much on this podcast from the 1975, but I saw this one this week with Denise Welsh and she was just humbling him so much. Like, basically he was saying something about like how he had to work at a coffee shop, like at a Cafe Nero to like afford his lifestyle as like a musician when he was up and coming. And she went on like daytime TV and was just like, guys, he literally worked at Cafe Nero for a week and me and Tim, like his dad, just like housed him, housed his friends, clothed them, fed them, like gave them everything. And then he pretended to work at Cafe Nero for a month after and he told his mom he got an award for best ever barista and it was just made it up.
No, that is so like
so embarrassing.
That's like, I know, that's the kind of thing when you like when you're at school and you're at the summer holidays and you've got work experience, you're like, and I got the best award for zookeeper. No, you weren't a zookeeper, Alan. You didn't even go. Like that's
you were that giving mealworms to a meerkat and it didn't even eat them.
Exactly. Like, what?
Oh, that's so good. I love obvious lies. Like there's something so funny about when someone's telling you a lie and you know it's a lie and it's not a hurtful lie. It's just like a white lie. Like in school, if someone comes back after summer holidays and they're like, yeah, had sex with a girl down the coast and everyone's like, oh, what's her name? And he's like, oh, you wouldn't know her. She goes to a different school and she doesn't have Facebook.
Oh my God. I remember she doesn't have Facebook. She doesn't use computer.
She doesn't have any social media and you would have never have heard of her. And also you're in year 7 and you're like 12 and this guy's like, yeah, it's sex. You're like, No, you didn't.
You won't like, you're like, I see you. You won't even like brush up a neck next little girl in the queue into science. Like you're not having sex. And then also the thing about it is like, it was AOL Messenger for us though. Come on. Oh, MSN. That girly. Webcam. I flashed my tits to so many on wanting eyes on there.
And you know what I saw the other day? It was actually on TikTok, so it's come full circle, is the Winx from MSN. And it was like that little cartoon smashing the guitar, big kiss that's like, yes! Like all of the like, they're like wings and they moved. And I watched them all. I was like, this is like some sort of sensory experience where I'm hearing it, I'm seeing it, and I'm like, I am 14, racing home from school just to go on the computer and sit there and go online and offline so that my crush will notice me in his corner of his screen.
And wasn't it so weird that there was just like the one computer that we all had? So like you've got your filthy teenage daughters and your like grubby teenage sons all just fighting over there to fucking get some. Like, and for us, it was like us being like, so like John, like do you fancy me? Do you want to be my boyfriend? Like all of that stuff. And then basically if they said yes, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to show you my boobs. I honestly thought I was Jodie Marsh in a hot minute for the first. I used to love doing that. And then teenage boys were just looking up hardcore porn because they're disgusting.
It's so funny. And it's like the family computer. And I even remember like dial up. So like your dad would be like, get off the internet. I need to use the phone. And you're like,
Dad, I'm talking to someone. You can't interrupt my conversation.
God, it was so good. You also mentioned to me before this, which is something no one has said yet in their favorite pop culture moments, was Girls 2013. And do you mean the TV show, like the Lena Dunham TV show? Yeah. Because that was an era. Yeah, that was such a slay. And it was like the first of its kind. Because I think now there's so much, like even in the era of Barbie and stuff, there's just so much great female produced TV and like comedy. But that back then, that was like a real pioneering HBO program for women.
Oh yeah, that was like a little kick in the face for everybody that I think was so overdue, and it was just centering somebody that didn't fit the stereo quota type, whatever that we've been perceived to be normal in terms of like body image, and then on top of that. Like just having four characters that were all essentially dickheads. Yes. And I loved the fact that we didn't like any of them. And for women, it's it was the whole thing of, I think for female characters, it's all about like the virtuoso of like being, mm-hmm. being like a mother or a girlfriend or a partner, mm. or, you know, all of them. These women were just four women and all of them were kind of immoral knobheads.
And that was the best thing when you're like sitting with your group of girlfriends and you'd be like, who are you? Who am I? But it was like you were all of them and different parts of all of them. Like no one was all Hannah, like the main girl. Like no one was all Shoshana. It was like you had annoying bits of each of them yeah. in your personality.
And you didn't really want to be any of them.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And whereas, if someone was like, you're Marnie, you'd be like, that's so offensive.
They're like, ugh, no, I'm as not. If. Ugh. I've only been with my boyfriend for 6 years and we haven't had sex in the last year only, okay? But that relationship was so toxic. But also, because obviously with Sex and the City, like, I don't know, everyone just wants to be Samantha. Like, mm-hmm. But also Sex and the City, I mean, just whilst we're on the topic of New York-based TV dramas. Mm-hmm. Is it a TV drama? No, that makes it sound like...
It's not a sitcom. It's not a comedy. I guess it is a drama. It's yeah. just like, just in the middle.
No one wants to be Carrie Bradshaw after like season like three or something, because then yeah. she just turns into a massive asshole.
Massive asshole.
you're like, oh my god, I really want to be Carrie. Look at her flat, look at her shoes, and then you're like, oh no, like you're horrible. But what they've done with it now is so bad.
It's so bad, but I kind of like, I can't look away. Like it's a car crash, and I'll put it on, and I'm watching it. I'm like, why? This is like. I can't. It's like if you got ChatGPT to write a program, if you said, can you please butcher Sex in the City and make it pseudo woke and make it so everyone hates it, but they can't stop watching it. And then ChatGPT was like, I know exactly
what you mean, babe. I've got you.
I'm on it.
Yeah, I'm on it. Don't worry. Who needs so those good. Writers, SAG? You got me. Yeah,
who needs writers?
Yeah. Strike.
And speaking of creativity, what has been your biggest creative failure and what did you learn the most from through this?
Ooh, I would say so. I think the failure is actually taking myself as seriously as I should be as an artist, because
okay.
I think when I consider myself in a performance space, because it feels like an unobtainable career because it's so difficult to, because it's so competitive and also it's financially so cost-worthy, and mm-hmm. that tends to fall on the backs of the artist, especially in the UK at the moment. There's just such a huge lack of funding, mm-hmm. And especially for like live performance stuff as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it feels like I'm like, oh, I'm not really an artist. Like, oh, I don't know. Like, I'm not really like, I sometimes find it hard to fully embrace who I truly am, which is a performer. And by doing that, I think I talk myself out of getting the support and the things that I need. So I think for me as an artist, it was actually really reevaluating my self-worth and value as a creative and actually being like, no, bitch, take up space. You are allowed and are warranted to be serious about what you want to do. You don't have to make serious work, but, you know, take yourself seriously. That's what I definitely got from this.
It's so weird that you say this, because I was literally speaking with my therapist about this morning. It's sort of like this imposter syndrome that all women, not all women, but most women get, that I think maybe it's not a barrier that men would come up against, because a lot of men might feel that they deserve those like step ups and that help. Like obviously having the podcast and then all the things that come with that, like, you know, graphic design or social promotion or like reaching out to guests that I want to have on the podcast, or even things like, oh, forcing myself to make TikToks when I really don't want to do it, but it's like, you just have to do it. It's like, there's this like sense of doubt and imposter syndrome, I guess, about am I good enough? Like, is this work worth doing? Like, how seriously can I take it when it comes to that versus my, as you said before, your muggle career, you know, it's like, it's sort of like, I wonder if men, especially like white, cis, straight men, feel those same barriers that we would feel when, especially in comedy, like women in comedy, I'm assuming there's less female comics, just like there's less female podcasters, you know, like when everything you see around you is shining a light on the other side of things. Yeah, I wonder if they do come up against those same challenges.
Well, I think something that I found really interesting about Edinburgh Fringe was about a lot about solo performance, going to see a mixture of both men and women, and what the general takeaway that I got from that is, wow, what women feel like they have, what women expose in order to feel like they're worthy of taking space. It felt really like a gender disparity that women consistently were deriving a lot of their stories around traumatic experience and trauma and trauma mining. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of shows about sexual abuse, rape, and also other aspects of being a woman in terms of in societal structures and the inequalities, but all deriving from real places of pain. And also, you know, again, it's pitting a perception of women that we feel like we have to in some way have experienced something traumatic, or in some way it was almost like be a victim of, to be allowed to be able to be here and talk about ourselves in this way, that I can take up an hour of your time. And for men, it was like, there's a dude fucking around with a ball for an hour.
Yeah.
He's just fucking around with a ball. Okay, cool.
Wow, that sounds really good. I'd really like to go and see that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, he's just sticking around with his microphone stand for an hour. Okay.
Awesome. Wow. I totally know what you mean. It's sort of like you have to earn your place to be able to have a voice. Like if you, and so many people out there, and especially men, have, they're like, I want to start a podcast, and there's no reason why. They're not an expert in any field. They're not very funny. They don't know anything about anything. They're just like, people deserve to hear my voice on things and what I have to say. And it's like, do they, or is that just what, like a sense of entitlement that you felt your entire life, that you deserve everything that you want and you will probably succeed in it, which is fucking annoying.
I know, it's so annoying. And like, it's not to take away from the power of creating impactful work that comes from like cause-led stuff and meaning. And I also feel, you know, and there's some kind of sadness in the fact that we're not seeing men being as emotionally vulnerable or feeling able to so on true. Stage. But at the same time, it's this entitlement that I feel like there's a natural sense of, yeah, what men feel like they have to do in order to take space up is very minimal and in comparison. And like you said, and like some, you know, I think there were very some like expose kind of shows or exposing shows out there at the Fringe for male performers. But yeah, it certainly wasn't in the near to enough the same volume. And it just, it made me really think, okay, shit, what do I want to do next? Because it's almost like, do I want to make the anti-show that's actually going, looking and analysing this and looking at actually why we behave like this? And can I not just get off stage for an hour and like fanny around with a spoon? Like, what? Like what's, I don't know, there's something in that, I think, that I definitely thought, okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you mentioned before about the cost of being an artist, and I'd love if you could elaborate on this and how self-producing folds into this as well.
Yeah, okay. So I think I like split it in between. So there's like logistical aspect of time, there's financial, and then obviously emotional. So in terms of logistical, like we were talking about the muggle job, the real job, and also your creative work. You know, a lot of us are having to stay in full-time employment. And actually, originally, I was very much working within hospitality hours to allow me kind of more freedom to be creative and write and stuff like that. But actually, I felt like it inhibited my ability to then go on and perform stuff, because obviously a lot of shows are evening shows, but a lot of work or predominant work that happens in hospitality is during the evenings. So I then moved into a 9-to-5 role. And again, you're then kind of sacrificing the other element of you haven't got all the time in the day to kind of be, let yourself go and be creative. And it's a lot more like you're getting a lot more exhausted or potentially tired, because those evening times your natural body clock is going. But I always have a slightly hospital body clock, and I am a bit more of a night owl, and sometimes I actually do just sit up and write until like 3 o'clock in the morning. because it just feels like the world's switched off. No one's going to come and, like, I don't know why I assume anyone's going to come through my front door, because that'd be
no distractions. Yeah.
But, like, you know what I mean? No distractions there. So that, I think time you're constantly just like ferreting, being like, and it's quite, can be quite anxiety inducing, because you don't want to piss off your day job. Mm. But you also really want to give yourself to your creative job. So you are sneaking in minutes and moments, and you're never switched off. Like, you're never switched off from your creative brain, even if you're at work, because you're at work, you could just check a personal email you've got. And by the way, like, so much of self-producing and being a creative is admin. Yeah. And that is not my forte. So
honestly, same. It's so much of podcasting as well. It's like reaching out to sponsors, guests, like, as I said before, like, remembering to do social posts every day. And I'm like, oh, and also giving yourself the ick a lot of the time. Like, I'm literally just putting myself out there and I keep expecting to get an email back being like, how dare you ask me on your podcast? That is so embarrassing. And I'm like, I know, but you know what I mean? It's just like this whole self-doubt thing. And you're just like, it's so, you have to really believe in yourself, and you have to just, you have to get on top of that admin stuff every day. It's very, self-motivation is a huge part of self-producing. And that is hard to pull off. Like, it's hard to be consistent with.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Absolutely. I cannot agree with you more. Like, you've just kind of articulated exactly my feelings. I'm definitely doing my show as well. It takes another part of me and myself to actually engage with it. So you're doing, as well as doing the show, then you've got to talk about how great the show is all the time, and you're never actually being able to be, because, you know, when you're a creative, you don't want to be inhibited by the producing aspects of the work. You want to make the work first, then figure it out. If you're self-producing, you're constantly, you've got this voice in your head that is going, oh, what about this? What about ticket sales? What about this? Da, 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 da. And actually, it's made me really realize that if I were to, so financially, just the other 2 points, but overall, I would say what I definitely learned about the experience is that I wouldn't self-produce a month-long run again.
Okay, no. From the fringe, you mean? Yeah.
No. No, thank you. Because financially, it's so crazy, babe. Like, that's, if my gran didn't die when she did, I wouldn't have been able to go to the Edinburgh Fringe. And I've only got one left, and she's just turned 100. And I don't want to, you know, she's made it this far. I don't want to.
She's 100?
Yeah, babe. My other brand has turned 100. So I'm gunning for her to stick it out, right?
Well done.
Obviously, unfortunately, my other grand passed, and I'm just got to wish death on another relative of mine now in order to go next year. Do you know what I mean? But even and that was really unexpected. Like, my poor nan that passed away, she'd lived the best of 20 years in a nursing home, throwing her bedpan at any guest that tried to walk in.
Oh, God.
And I thought, well, that's, you know, and that was where all of her money went. And the fact that there was anything left for any of her grandchildren was frankly amazing. So that amount alongside, without that amount and them being able to save, I wouldn't have been able to. But that was all self-funded, my Edinburgh Fringe. And that was, I will say now, was 13 grand.
Yeah, wow.
That's my life savings.
Yeah, and I guess it's like you have to hustle all year for that as well. And then it's like the hope that, you know, your work gets picked up and you sort of like put, like, I feel the same way, like you're putting all this energy and money into, like, hopefully eventually it starts like self-regulating and like the money you're putting in is like going to come back your way. But then you're like, God, if I give up now, then it won't. So that is a good motivator, I think. But yeah, it's just it's a lot of pressure.
And when you're self-funding, so the self-funding aspect, and also because, like you said, again, the whole pressure of being self-produced is that you've got to be really on it in terms of social media, online opportunities, and that's especially for things like awards and funding. And I had just the worst. I would be like clicking on it, application closed yesterday, and you're like, no. I just had so many occasions like that when you're like, oh my God, why is everything conspiring?
Yeah.
So that's financial. And then emotional in terms of self-producing, because, like, I tapped in on it before, but in terms of you creating your own work and your investment in that, and especially when it's around a subject matter that is potentially taboo, shameful, stigmatized, it takes a lot to even feel the capacity to be able to want to even use your voice in that subject area or the subject matter. So yeah, there's a lot of emotional stuff that goes into it. So yeah, that's my, that's the cost of it all, guys.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm really excited to chat about the themes that were in your solo show Up at the Fringe. And it's carrying on as well. But before we jump into that, I would love to know, what is your funniest date story?
Oh, God. So I was like, fuck, I can't really, like, I couldn't think of the last, like, proper date. So I generally just have kind of relationships with bad, messy endings on field. Like, I don't.
Field's good. I think field's quite, like, honest. Like, it's nice and refreshing that everyone, because on Hinge, everyone's like, oh, I'm looking for a long term relationship open to short. Why lie?
Why lie?
Don't lie.
I just want like a long term casual relationship.
Yeah. Like, what are you talking about?
Dick. So the honesty, but then with the honesty comes the absolute bravado. It's a bunch of boring men that have subsidized their personalities with a kink. And
is such a good way to put it.
They all just want to be very few, like, it's all dominance led, physical. It's very like harness, strap ups, choke down. I honestly sustained injuries from fear.
Yeah, like you just want to hurt women, I think. Like,
really, I had one incident when they massacred my chest in such a way.
Oh my God.
He had a fetishization, and I can't remember what it's called now, for cheating. So he fetishized cheating, and he was in an open relationship. So this is obviously the dream scenario for him.
Okay.
He said that his girlfriend was on the app as well. I would go over to his house. We'd have sex. I didn't realize that he was like purposefully placing items of her clothing and things around the house that we would have sex on top of. He tried to use her sex toys on me. And because that she didn't have as big a bust as me, he used that as an excuse for when he annihilated. So we're obviously in the throes of things, and he basically squeezes down on my chest in such a way that I have like really extensive bruising all over me.
Oh my God.
And it wasn't only until the bruising started appearing a day or two later that I was like, oh yeah, I remember. Like, and I had to really rethink the experience. Like, oh yeah, that was bad. Oh yeah, I actually remember asking him to stop. oh, he clearly didn't. And you know, when you feel like when you're having such a sensory experience, like having sex, right?
Mm.
You know, when everyone talks about consent,
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's really hard to remember to use your voice.
Yeah, and also you might feel like there's different ways of saying no that aren't verbal as well. Like maybe like it's reading someone's body language, or but then also you feel like a sense of guilt that you didn't make it clear enough sometimes. Mm. Like I didn't like that, but I thought you could tell by the way that my body was rigid or the way that I didn't say anything or I wasn't like responding, you know. But then it's like, yeah, you don't want to feel
really
like
hard.
You've not made it clear enough. But then, yeah, in those moments, using your voice can be challenging, because sometimes you might even not know that you weren't 100% into it until you think about it later and you look upon it like retrospectively.
Oh my God, like I am, that is like me in a nutshell. Like I go into basically everything, go, wah! And that could be conversations, anything. And then I walk away and I go, did I say what I meant?
Oh, or when you hang out with all your friends and then you leave and you're like, oh God, everyone hates me. Why did I say all those things? Yeah, and then right? Like you're like waiting for this text to come through going, your behavior at lunch was really weird.
Disrespectful.
And it doesn't come through, but you're like, your anxiety's like, any minute now, everyone's going to disown you.
You're like, oh shit. So that's generally like how I feel like I approach most things. So that was so that was that kind of field experience. And to Frank, like I was getting all kinds of like stuff being like, I mean, I'm consenting to all of it, but there was a point like, so I was doing like bondage stuff, like rope stuff, and it'd always be with, you know, and pegging and things like that. Like so it would always be that everyone is super privileged and everyone thought, and the way that men would like present the idea of pegging to me, and he's like,
mm-hmm.
I just think like I've never done this before, but I really want you to. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I just feel like this is in some way like a subversive like insult to like me, like no one else wants to touch my asshole, but I know you will.
I know you will. And it's like, you have been selected to be my learning experience,
my little butt plug.
Ta-da! Like, wow, I'm so lucky.
Like, and I did it, and I won't be doing, I did it twice and I won't be doing it again, honestly, because of the knees. Kills your knees. Yeah. And I'm such a pillow princess. I was like, why have I done this? Like, why am I out of breath? And I'm just looking at your stinky little butthole.
I don't like it. Just let me lay on the bottom and do nothing, please. That's my kink. Missionary.
Yeah. Oh, babe. By the end of it, I was like, you know, all I want now is I just want a man to look me in the eye and like do me missionary, because it was getting to the point where I was getting like strung up like a caterpillar cocoon on these like mad like rope things, and they would just go and have a wank in the corner and just leave me dangling,
and you're there like a cured ham on the roof hanging from a net.
Yeah, but because they were always such rich pricks, they'd have like great like panoramic views of like the London. Oh look, there's London Eye.
We're inside the London Eye.
I was like swinging around. Oh, I can see Big Ben from here. Like, oh fucking hell.
God.
It was ridiculous. So yeah.
Loved it. What a wild ride. I feel wild. Like we talked about 5,000 things just there. It was very serious, then it was very silly, and then it was very weird.
Yeah.
So
that's dating.
Yay! I saw this funny TikTok and it was like, this girl was like, does anyone feel like they're born in the wrong era? And this guy stitched it. He's the funniest comedian ever. I can't remember his, it's Brett Nordstrom or something. And he was like, girly pop, do you think anyone here likes being on dating apps? No one wants to be out here. I wish everyone I've matched with on a dating app was dead. I was like, so true.
Because it's like with a dating app, you're like, well, the precious time, the precious goddamn fucking time that I'm not trying to self-produce my ass and like I'm already trying to sell myself so much as a creative that any time that I get free, I don't want to have to replicate that idea of selling my sweet ass to a bunch of unworthy men who I know when I meet Harry or James at cocktail
or
bar.
Charlie or Tom,
that they are going to be subpar company. And I wish I'd just gone and had a drink with my mates.
Honestly. And it's like, yeah, you have to spend so much of your life selling yourself, whether it's in the office or whether it's like even to your family, your extended family. Yeah, like it's a long, like, just shut up and take my money. Like, Hinge, just set me. And then you do all of that and you get like one match. And I'm like, girly pops, what am I doing?
What the hell? It's always my algorithm on Hinge was so off key. I'd be matching with people
so
from
ugly.
Like, I genuinely matched, and I don't know why there's two people in Clapham called Tybalt, but there are two different individual men in Clapham called Tybalt. Okay. And I was like, what fuckery is my algorithm thinking that I'm some like Tory sadist that just loves like fucking
Tory sadist.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's doing too much.
That just loves like boat shoes, no socks, kind of like pink shirt, see you on a yacht. I'm like, no, thank you. No. Oh, what the fuck?
Oh my God. I was so upset. That's such an iconic episode title, Tory Sadists. Oh, dear. Well, thank you so much for going through the speed deck question round. We ended up having a little bit too much fun in that round. It's gone for 30 minutes.
Oh, God, sorry.
I loved it. But on a more serious note, but also in a more comedic note, can you tell me everything about your solo show, All Aboard the Termination Station? So when I heard the name of this show, I was very intrigued. I did not expect it to be about abortion, and I was sorely mistaken. So please tell me everything about it and the inspiration behind your decision to create a show around reproductive rights and abortion. Like, just tell me absolutely everything, and I have so many questions to ask you.
All Aboard was created back in 2019, around about with the first sort of version of it. There's been, I'll explain why it's evolved and it's no longer the same show that it once was. So basically, I had an experience when I was 19 years old. That was quite traumatic. So I basically found out that I was pregnant and went into complete denial and shock. And mainly because I actually realized I had no idea what an abortion really entailed and what it was. And it felt like something that was so fearful to me. I just decided that I wasn't going to accept what was happening. But with stuff like that, you can't really not accept it's happening, because it's definitely happening.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And it wasn't until the point where I threw up on the back, projectile vomited on the back of my boyfriend's mum's head while she was making a bacon sandwich.
No.
But I went,
what?
It's real, babe, isn't it? That's right. You can't. No, it's happening.
On her head.
Yeah, on the back of her head, just boom.
Wow.
And I can't stand the smell of bacon ever since. And that's actually something that features in the show. So
amazing.
Yeah. I realized I couldn't hide from it anymore. And then I went to obviously access an abortion. I was much further along than I anticipated. And the outcome of obviously accessing the abortion was that I found nobody really wanted to talk to me about it. And I'd never experienced that. I come from a really liberal, open family background. In that sense, I'm really privileged that I feel like I'm totally able to speak freely about anything that I want. But for some reason, my friends and my family, and I don't think it was an intentional way to make me feel ashamed or or any kind of stigma, but they just didn't have the right tools to know how to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
And so I lived with a lot of pain because of that. And then what happened is that I realized through doing writers workshops and things like this, that the story of that experience was the thing that kept repeatedly wanting to come out of me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, so you want to talk about that, I guess. And then what happened is Repeal the 8th happened in 2018, and that opened up the public dialogue about abortion. And then that led me into thinking, okay, I want to be a part of this conversation, led me into wanting to create a show. And I essentially went into the show, into the making of the show, thinking it was going to be a very serious piece of theatre because of it being a serious subject matter. I thought I had to approach it with the same level of weighted sort of heaviness and seriousness.
Yeah.
So I was writing, like, you know, spoken word, and I was assuming that, you know, like Katie Mitchell will be taking it to the National, kind of like really thinking there's going to be some big kind of episodic drama. And I performed it, and I just did a couple of, like, you know, outside eye readings of it to my friends, and they all just sat there like, what the fuck is this?
This is unhinged.
This is like, they're like, are you okay? Like, and then my friend just went, oh, Lily, do you think maybe you could just, like, tell me what you mean? Like, what do you mean? Like, what does this mean? And then I started talking to her, and she started laughing. And I was like, oh, my God, okay. It's going to be funny. Because I was trying to run away from myself. And I think that's what you do, especially as a creative, like the one natural bit of habitat or space that you sit in that you're comfortable in or that you're good in. Or that you're good at is normally the one thing you're like, oh God, whatever. That's obviously like the worst, from most rubbish thing to be out of all the things. I must be this. And you always try and catapult yourself in the opposite direction. And actually, it was actually about going, no, know what you're good at, what your skill set is, and then harness that. And mine's always been kind of more comedic performance. So that's what led it into that realm, because I wanted to be able to feel comfortable in telling the story. And that's where the truth and the honesty comes from, is actually through the humor, because that's how I feel like I can express my experience.
Yeah. And humor is such a good tool for bringing those difficult conversations to the forefront. And I think it allows people, because like you said, people weren't willing or they didn't have the words to speak about it with you when you were younger. Like, it's a good way to open up those conversations, and it's an accessible way to help people figure out how to articulate how they feel about certain things. And how do you balance that fine line between humor and then obviously reproductive rights is such a, it is such a serious issue. Like, how did you find that balance?
I think it was the task of it being like, how silly can I be? Like, okay, yes, it is a really serious subject. And I think the thing that it's rooted in personal experiences, it's actually taking my ownership of my story. This is about me. So it's not being a spokesperson for reproductive rights as a whole. It's being an advocate for reproductive rights because of my experience. And that in itself feels like, you know, create. And that's why the show's linked to being creative activism, is because it is essentially creating impact. But again, I'm being able to push boundaries and push limits of the silliness and ridiculousness, because I'm the one that takes the hit in terms of the humor of it all. I'm not laughing at others' experience, you know, and I'm not taking away from, because there is a poignant part of the show, and it definitely climactically leads into like a more poignant point at the end. However, I find like sincerity in theatre has to be earned. Like, you can't come and like deliver loads of like trauma dumping or being really serious or like directive, like, oh yeah, I was in a car crash, then my gran got raped. It's like coming out and saying that, it's just, that's a reference to Summer Heights High, sorry.
Yeah.
I couldn't help it. You know, he's like walks
it's
in.
It's because I'm Australian, Mr. you're G. just like, just hearing Jemay.
Like, he's like, I don't, out of context.
Yeah.
But it's so funny. Like, I love so that show. Good. Anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's kind of like delivering all this like surrealist or whatever, like coming on stage and being like, and then everyone died and I'm grieving.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of doesn't leave anywhere to grow. But if you come in and you start messing around with the ideas of things, and you're actually giving it a funny lens, and also the reason why I also wanted to do it is because being a woman is messy and chaotic. Having an abortion can be messy and chaotic. I wanted to make a show that reflected that experience for me. And yeah, not being a victim of my decision. Like, I'm empowered as a woman to have this choice.
Yeah.
So that's also why I wanted to make it something fun.
And can you give us a glimpse of some of the like specific topics or angles that you explore through humor across the show? Obviously without totally spoiling it. But yeah, what are the sort of the themes that you go into specifically in regards to your experience?
Access. So I think a lot of it is self stigma and shame. Coming and confronting or having a conversation with the fetus or whatever you want to call it. I go inside myself and I meet them and it's I don't want to give too much away, but it's funny and it's really silly. And I talked to somebody recently about that. They were doing something like a doctorate and they wanted to talk to people that have made work about abortion and made art about it. And she said, why do you think you do that? And I hadn't ever really thought about it. And the reason is that when I go and talk to, you know, whatever's inside me, they're the one that actually gives me the tools to go and to find how I can get access, because they go, yeah, you do it like this. I'll take you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was about acceptance of, you know, knowing that I knew that what I did was right for them, and the fact that they, whatever they were, this is the right thing to do. I'll help you do it. So I think that was something that I hadn't really even realized I was kind of broaching, but I think that's sort of what that represents. And generally also about kind of in the mentality of when you are pregnant and you do decide to have an abortion, how women, we're not like, we don't put ourselves in a little glass box and shut ourselves away when we make that decision. I went out. I got pissed. I got fucked up when I was pregnant, because I knew that the outcome was that I wasn't going to continue to be a pregnant person. Also that I bring that aspect into the show as well.
That's so fascinating. And I guess there's more to that than like I would have thought. Like, there's so many other things that come into it that you wouldn't realize unless you know someone or you yourself have been through that experience. So I think it's an interesting contribution to the discussion. And speaking about the conversation surrounding reproductive rights and abortion and women's health, how do you hope that the show impacts those conversations? And have you received feedback from people that have come to the show, or that they've changed their perspective on it, or that, you know, they're going to go out and have a difficult conversations? Like, what's the sort of feedback you're getting, and how do you see the show contributing to that wider discussion?
I've had amazing audience response. So I had somebody reach out to me. He and his wife had a child, and it really severely impacted their relationship and his mental health in a way that they were totally not prepared for or expecting, to a point where he felt like incapable of being able to look after his daughter. And it was becoming, you know, it had created an incredible detriment to his well-being, basically. He was, but you know, still very much in love and completely adoring his child and his wife as well. But his wife recently got pregnant again, and they decided, in order to be able to, you know, continue to work on what they were currently experiencing, they chose to have an abortion. And he said that he felt really a lot of shame and a lot of pain, because he felt like, because they were in, you know, the supposed normal nuclear dynamic of man, wife and child, we must have another child, because, you know, that's what we perceive to be normal. And actually, he said that, you know, seeing the show helped him feel less ashamed and not,
that's amazing,
you know, not having such feeling of, of feeling, I don't know, lesser than
guilty.
And then I've had a lot of really beautiful responses for, and I had a man. So basically, I had another dude. I'm referencing the kind of male responses, because I've actually had a lot more than I anticipated, and I also think it's nice to highlight that.
I think it's quite meaningful too, because when it, you know, most women, I feel like, you can sort of imagine the response, but for men, I think it's a bit more, it's an area that I wouldn't know how to approach, or I wouldn't be confident that they would be on the same page as me, you know?
Yeah, well, just get it. And I had another, so there's an annual protest that happens at abortion. So I'm an executive committee member for Abortion Rights UK. Amazing. Through the work that I've done with the show, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. Essentially, mm-hmm. I helped them do kind of comedy performance fundraising events, and have done that now for a few years, and they're brilliant. Mm. And they do a protest every year. So there's this awful protest that happens. Well, there's this rally day that happens. So the pro-life movement rents out the whole of Parliament Square. It's a rentable, it's a rentable space in London. And that goes to show how much ridiculous amounts of money they have, all from the church and from American America.
The American States of America.
The American States of America, fucking shut up for us women. So they have this whole day, and they have this they do these floats and these stands, and they go on this big walking protest all around central London. And essentially what Abortion Rights do is they do a counter protest. So they will counter this, obviously. And I, on my last show, I had loads of I had a group of pro-lifers infiltrate my show. And yeah, it was a lot. Like, so they all bought tickets, so more for them.
This is mad. I was gonna say, what sort of backlash have you had or criticism? But that's like way beyond what I expected.
So they came in my last show at Edinburgh Fringe, and it's quite funny. It was quite,
what,
you know,
this just happened, like, just happened like in the last month,
2 weeks ago.
Oh my god, are you okay?
It was so weird, babe. Like, honestly, so I was in the show, and they paid, they sat down. Obviously, I wasn't aware of them even being in the room. And then I do a whole false start. 10 minute stand up followed by like a song. Mm. And then I say, this is how the show begins. Mm-hmm. And then when I said that, on perfect cue, all just banged up these huge blown up placards of dead babies, which is fake imagery of dead fetuses.
Oh my god. They knew that you were going to do that, so they must have planned it.
It was so surreal. Was in my show being like, did I organize that
by accident?
yeah. And they were all there, and it was really like so creepy.
Did you finish the show?
Yeah, so the audience, I kind of went in, you know, you go fight or flight mode. I went into fight mode, and I can't really remember it, but I just went. So this happened. Placards went up, and I went, "Oh, here they are, coming in here." Thinking you can and I went like, "This is the reason why I do my show, and I've only got one thing to say to you, and that's get the fuck out." Whoa. I opened the doors to the theater, and I said, "You need to leave." And then I was taken away from the situation, and then the audience went in on them. They're like, "Get the fuck out!"
Whoa.
Everyone was screaming at them. We had to get security in,
Shit, mate,
to like escort them out of the premise and then out of the venue or whatever. And then I was asked, obviously, do you want to continue the show? I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to do it. I think it's important that I do."
Yeah, because otherwise they win, don't they?
The audience, mate, when I walked back in, it was like a football pitch.
Oh my god, what a story. Amazing. For your Fringe, was it your first Fringe ever?
Yeah, it was my
Jesus,
first.
So intimidating.
It was so weird. If they weren't such freaks, I'd invite them back to be my chorus. They had impeccable timing.
Yeah, great timing.
But honestly, wow,
yeah, that's crazy. Mad. And I was gonna say, finally, can you talk about any upcoming projects that you have? And I know that you mentioned about the advocacy work that you're doing with abortion rights in the UK. Yeah, what's coming up for you? What's next for you?
Yes, so I would just say follow Abortion Rights UK online on their Twitter and Instagram, which is at abortionrights_AR for their Insta. They recently got hacked, so they've had to start up a whole new account. So there are two currently floating around. Follow either, but they're just trying to move their account onto this other page now, where they feel like they're not going to get basically pro-lifers just again trying to come and ruin everyone's good times or activism or whatever. Yeah. They're just horrible. I get so much hate now from pro-lifers.
Do you?
I genuinely,
on your Instagram and stuff?
On my Instagram, like, they control really? Through all of my photos. They literally, there's a quote that I use in my poster, and it says, she's deranged, we must pray for her poor demented soul. And I'm like, oh, that's going on my poster. I love it.
Poor demented soul.
Oh, no, it's great.
Wow. So, that's another great episode title. I'm just spoiled for choice in this one. What was the other one? Yeah, something Tory. Something...
Oh, Tory Sadist.
Tory Sadist. So funny. Oh, Lily, thank you so, so much for jumping on the podcast. This has been
You're
so
welcome.
Fun and also very informative, which I love. I love to learn. Yay. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, babe.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with the wonderful Lily. Please let me know on my Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, wherever, if you've got any thoughts or stories of your own to share. And feel free to submit questions through my website as well. I will always answer them and I'll always try and come back to you. See you next week. Peace.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.